Now, once again, here's Mark.
Rolled up to my Chevrolet. I climbed down.
Well, good morning, everybody. Excuse me. You may have been the first person I'm talking to today. Let me turn you up as well so that you can yep with me.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. We've seen one another all morning long.
Yes.
Well, we're welcoming our listeners. Good morning. If you have a car question, now's the time to call in. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. And last week was exciting, to say the least. We had 20 phone calls. That's a record for the show. We've never had that many. We usually average between 15 and 17, sometimes as low as 10 or 12, but usually between 10 and 17 callers.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it's going to get busy like that, but 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960.
And everybody seems to call in the last usually hour for sure, but mostly half an hour, so it's a little crazy.
I'm with you. Let me start with automatic transmission exchange. Everybody knows the transmissions are really sophisticated and they're quite different than the 50s and the 60s and the 70s and even to the 80s. The difference being is that the old transmissions, we used to shift those based on pressure, based on throttle, based on a lot of different things. And then they would just go so far and they'd shift whether you wanted them to or not. With electronic transmissions, the computer tells it when to shift, and the computer is looking at a wide range of data to decide when to shift your car. So the problem becomes, when you're diagnosing those kinds of problems, is the computer signal being sent? Is it received? Then once it's received, is the action, like the solenoid is opened or closed, is that occurring? So it's not easy. But it is kind of easier for the guys that just do that, which is like automatic transmission exchange. So if you live in Central Phoenix or anywhere, really, and you want a good transmission shop, then stop by Automatic Transmission Exchange, 40th Street in Washington. And we got a caller already.
Good deal.
Who is it?
That would be Richard. Say hello.
Hi, Richard. How are you?
I'm doing quite well, Mark.
How can I help you?
I've got a 2013 Nissan Xterra.
Okay.
Got 27,000 miles on it.
Okay.
I bought it from a private seller back east and had it shipped out here.
Okay.
First thing I did is put a set of new tires on it. Second thing I did was go down to have a wheel alignment. The wheel alignment shop couldn't do it on the camber side because the Xterra doesn't have adjustable cam bolts.
Okay.
I then made arrangements to put in adjustable cam bolts, and that was the problem. The bolt that's in there on both sides is seized up, rusted together with the sleeve that they fit in.
Okay.
The guy tried an impact wrench, got the bolts loose, well, the nut loose, and banged away on it for a while with a sledgehammer and said, I don't want to do too much more because I might cause that sleeve to separate from the rubber that surrounds it, and then you got substantial problems. He said he couldn't use a torch because he'll melt the rubber around the sleeve, and that causes substantial problems. I asked him if there's any way that you could use any kind of spray that would help eat away at the rust between the bolt and the sleeve, and he said, no, you'd use so much that you'd probably degrade the rubber itself. So my issue is, do you have any idea as to what else I can try? And then he said, basically, you're kind of limited to just religiously doing tire rotations about every 5 or 6,000 miles.
Okay, stop. We got to go way back to the beginning.
Okay.
What did they give you, a piece of paper that said something was out of whack?
The alignment shop said they could not do the camber alignment.
I understand
because,
that. Yeah, I understand that, but they didn't give you any documents.
No.
Okay. Do you have abnormal wear on either front tire?
I'm looking. They're brand new, so no.
Okay. What about the old ones that were on it?
The answer was yes. They. A variety, that's why I had to change the tires out with only 27,000 miles.
But you can't tell me what that wear was all
no,
about.
No.
Okay,
no.
Well, I, You're and asking he me to could comment on what you've been told by this guy and that guy and this guy and that guy, and this guy looked at it and he said this. And you know that I can't do that. I can tell you that what should have happened at the very beginning is what's the camber value? And let's say it's +2 to -2. Let's just pretend. +2 to -2. And you're at +3. Who cares? And if we don't see associated wear with this camber problem, then we don't care. So we're talking about splitting a human hair in half. So I don't know, and you've done all this work, and you've moved from shop to shop, and really what should have happened is the shop at the very beginning, if they're not capable of installing camber kits, they shouldn't be in the alignment business. So what needs to happen is you need to start all over. And I hope he didn't beat on – did he beat on that – on the threaded part of that stud or
no.
not? Okay, good.
No.
Good.
Because
if he did, he just messed it all up. So really and truly, we need to find out what the camber is. The camber wears the outside or the inside of the front tires. If it's just one side, then it's just one side. Now, if it's the wide angle is -3 and you're -20, I would bet you'd have a really bad pull. And I'm using an exaggerated numbers. So, you know, if you don't have a pull and you're driving down the road, and on the crowned road, city street, you drift a little to the right, and on a highway, you stay pretty steady because the road is flatter and we're not moving the water off the roadway into the curbs. So, you need to have somebody drive it, and you need to have, look at the tread wear, and that'll tell you whether this camber thing. Now, the only good thing about this is they couldn't do the camber kit, so there was no financial motivation to tell you that they would do the camber kit. But did they refer the second guy to you?
He's in the same shop.
Okay. So I thought you went to another shop. So
The two shops are sort of co-located.
Okay. Okay. Well, I can't tell you. What part of town do you live in?
North Central Phoenix.
Okay. Why don't you go back and ask them for a readout?
Okay.
I mean, tell them, does your alignment machine have the ability to print out, you know, a readout? And then it better have your car on there, and it better have the specifications for your car on there. It can't be generic. It can't be at Ford, because that's the last one that was on the alignment rack. So they got to put it back on. They got to hook up the heads, and they got to swing left and right with the steering wheel, and that gathers up all the data. Then they're going to give you a print out that has green and red on it and all that other kind of stuff. You just have to take that with a grain of salt.
Okay.
All right. Positive.
Assuming, Mark, for purposes of argument that I either now or in the future will need to change out that cam bolt and put an adjustable bolt. If it's seized up, any idea about how to do that?
I'm not going to guess, because I know you're going to go out and get a torch, or you're going to start beating on it.
I'm not going to do anything.
I'm going to tell you something. Old guys know that you're waving the red flag in front of a bull when you start talking to a gray-haired guy.
Okay.
So this is on a 1 to 10 scale with difficulty. It might be a 4 or a 5.
Okay.
So, but here's the question. Hey, Mark, how often do you, first of all, how many cars do you service? Oh, 15 to 20 a day. How often do you have to put a camber kit on a monthly basis? No, month doesn't work. Mm-hmm. How much a year? Maybe 5 or 6 camber kits a year. Are any of them with 20 or 30,000 miles? Nope.
Okay.
Where are the camber kits needed? Well, that's after the upper ball joint or the lower ball joint caves in, and that's usually north of 100,000 miles. Well, do all of them need a camber kit at 100,000? Heck no. We're still back down to single digits over a year. So, you know, if you don't start with the specifications, then you're, but really and truly, this is not a big deal. If you don't have, and I would have loved to know what the other tires, but again, the car will pull to the positive side of camber and to the neg, and then it will, it'll pull to the positive side of the camber. And so if you got 3 positive on the left and the other one's 2, it's going to pull to the left because the left is bigger than the right. And so if it goes straight down the road, we're pretty close.
Okay. So sounds good to me.
All right. Good luck to you. Thank you, Richard. That, you know, that's a big problem because we don't arm them. My industry doesn't arm them with enough information. You got any comments on that?
Nope.
Okay. Well, I can't really say them, okay? Because yeah. I can't separate myself as some god of cars.
Yeah.
So
no,
there's lots of other guys out there that can pull
yeah,
this off.
Yeah. And maybe another shop might be able to help him, you know, another alignment shop or something like that if they have it checked again.
Okay. But he needs to go back to the first shop because the first shop is the one that started this. And number two, they should have given him a readout. And if they don't have a readout, their alignment machine is from the Fred Flintstone days.
Okay.
Okay. Or they're going to come up with our printer's broken. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Well, if that's the case and the printer's broken, let's put it on the alignment rack. Let's do the setup again and let me see what you're seeing. Right. And then take your phone out and take his picture.
And then what about the bolt?
Well,
if
we're not
it needs
dealing,
it.
If we, yeah, we're not going to do it until
he
we get.
He wanted to know how to get the bolt out.
Well, and that's fine. That's fine. That's kind of like me telling you, would you go out and doctor my horse? And you don't know which end to start at. You can't describe this. Well, on a horse is different because you can't describe it on the radio. But the idea is you have to look at it. And penetrating oil? We wouldn't use penetrating oil? What's that silliness all about?
Wait, you're saying you would, probably.
Of course you would.
Okay.
Of course you would.
Okay.
And then when you're done, why don't you take a wet rag and just soap it up and wipe all this penetrating oil off the rubber? You know what I'm saying? Why don't you just go to the pressure washer and ch-ch-ch-ch. And then if the rubber's gonna, it's a boot. I'm sure it's a boot.
Okay.
The rubber, I don't know.
Yeah.
You're doing. It's what about this? What about this? What about this?
I'm just asking you.
All right, fair enough. Fair enough.
You're
ask you about
cooking. You're getting a little wadded up already after one call. Watch out.
No, I'm not mad at Richard.
I know
I'm
that.
He is in a situation that he didn't have any control over, and somebody put him in that situation.
Right.
And so they say, this is what you need, but we can't do it, but we're going to tell you how to have them do it.
Yeah.
Okay? So that doesn't make sense.
Okay.
Anyway, we've got another caller.
And that would be Jock.
Jock?
J-O-C-K.
Okay, I wanted to make sure I didn't hear you, but I know I got to take a break first.
Yeah.
So, Jock, you stay right there. I promise we'll be back in about 3.5 minutes. Well, welcome back, everybody. My name's Mark Salem, and sitting next to me is my wife. She's here to second guess every decision I make.
No, I'm just here to keep you calm, which is not really easy.
Oh, be quiet. Be quiet. I am, as long as I'm laughing, I'm fine. Jock, like I said, you're up. And Jock, have you been named Jock your whole life?
No, actually, I think your call screener didn't hear me too good. It's Jack, J-A-C-K.
Okay.
Oh, my God. We're starting the show off bad already. What I was going to say to him is my nickname in all through my younger years was Jocko.
Right.
And so, but this, it's a long way from Jack. Okay, we're going to forgive him, and because it's too early in the show to beat him up. But anyway, I'm all yours, Jack.
So, Mark, I was going to ask you, my daughter is going to get her first car, and she really loves the little Kia Soul. Probably looking in the year range everywhere between, let's say, 2010 to 2015. And so just wondering, what have your guys been experienced with that? And the big thing I'm looking at is the GDI engines that Kia uses. You know, I've heard that they have different styles of those GDIs, some of which end up getting fouled up because they don't spray any type of gasoline on through the valves, and others that they do. I didn't know what's happening with Kia on that.
Well, first of all, let me tell you, the Kia Soul is a nice car. It's kind of small for me, and I'm not telling you what to do, but I put all my kids in 3/4-ton four-wheel drive trucks hoping that they would win if they were stupid and had a wreck. And so I just thought bigger's better. Now, I didn't put them in a Suburban because I didn't want to pay for 9 kids who had back and neck aches once that accident happened. So that's kind of how I thought. The Kia and the Hyundai is a really good car. Those cars were really big pieces of crap years and years and years ago, but they're really good cars. With respect to direct injection, it's just a matter of the roll of the dice. If somebody is running the car hard every once in a while, that seems to be better than the little old lady who goes to Circle K in the doctor's office and never drives more than 3 miles outside of the range of her house. or the little old man. So I don't know that I'd worry about that. You're going to find a lot of people that talk about that, but do you understand how, what's going on here?
Well, right on, you know, a standard injected engine, you've got flow, you know, across the valves.
A back of the valve.
And so,
the back
right,
of the valve.
And so then that way it cleans them up.
No, no. What happens is we go behind the valve, but we're using oil to open and close the valve. So we're going in the shaft area, so to speak, but we also use oil to lubricate the stem of the valve. The gas would pass through that area and pick that oil up. So we had a constant drip of oil on this, but as the gasoline came in and the valve opened up, it would go ahead and pull the oil into the cylinder. Nobody ever saw blue smoke. Two reasons, catalytic converter and the amount of oil is minuscule at best. So now that we've moved the injector to the cylinder, we're not washing the gas off the back of the valve. And so the engine temperatures cause that oil to oxidize, which is turned to black tar. Then there'll come a time where that whole intake runner, maybe the size of your thumb or a little bit better on your sole, the size of your thumb, that intake behind the intake valve will just plug up. And then, of course, you have to take it apart to clean it up. So I want to tell you that we started off at the very beginning with a lot of direct injection problems. They've tapered off dramatically, and I don't know if it's a gasoline additive that they're using. I don't know what it is. I can tell you that most cars today are using a synthetic oil, and the synthetic oil won't oxidize till about 500 degrees. The conventional oils would oxidize at 250, 300. So there's a significant difference on whether the oil's going to turn to a carbon or whether it's going to still not be a carbon and be oil. So I don't know that that would be the biggest thing I would worry about. I'd be more interested in taking that car and having a used car check over and finding out how it's been taken care of. And if it's ever been wrecked, I'd do a Carfax and all that other kind of stuff. So I think I'd pay, most shops are $75 to $125 for what we call a used car check over. And I think that a good thorough bumper to bumper would be better than anything. But then again, you know, there's a lot of people worried about direct injection. I'm not. So, that help you?
Okay. Yeah, I was going to ask as I go over to Thunderbird Auto, and is it something that the guys can actually, I don't know if they have a pull off the valve cover or what they've got to do to peek down into the area and make sure that it's not jammed up with a bunch of corrosion carbon?
No. You're not going to get into that port unless you pull the intake completely off. Now, you could probably take the throttle body off, and if you have a flexible camera, you can drop that down in there. It's going to be a hit and miss whether you hit the right runner or not. You could probably go in there, but the camera would have to have a light on the lens. And so you might be able to do that. There's a lot of shops out there that have fancy, you know, chemicals that we're going to inject into your car, and it's going to turn to foam, and it's going to do all this fancy stuff. That's not anything I play with. That's just, I don't care if you do, but that's nothing I offer my customers. There's a whole lot of chemicals out there that are going to whiten your teeth and make your armpits not stink and make your car love you. And if you do this, then your car's going to love you. But really, who loves you is the guy that does it for $100 or $200, and your car doesn't care. So that's kind of my feelings about all that kind of stuff. But, you know, that would be it. You said you're only in 27,000 miles on this, or what were you at in this one?
I'm sorry, you're asking me?
Yeah, how many miles are on this car we're talking about?
Oh, she's just starting to look for these. Like I say, probably in her price range, anywhere between 2010 and 2015, and anywhere mileage. On the low end, probably 30,000 to the high end, 75,000.
Okay. And I agree with you. It depends on whether you pick 5,000 miles a year, you 15,000 miles a year, 20,000 miles a year. So, you know, an 8-year-old car is going to, at 10,000 miles a year, is going to have 80,000 miles. I would expect that you'd have a rough idle. I would expect that you might have a little ta-ta-ta-ta-ta, a little bit. I would expect that you could tell that it doesn't have the power it should. But those are the symptoms of a problem that's coming up hard. Okay? Alrighty, Jack. Thank you very much. Let me talk about Larry Harker's Auto. Remember we were talking about the camber kits? Okay. Bob at Larry Harker's Auto is a wizard. You know that.
Right.
This on a 1 to 10 scale, I said, what was it, 4 or 5 or 6, somewhere around mm-hmm. there? It's a 2 to him.
Okay.
Okay, it's a 2 to him. He's been around the block. He's a grizzly old guy. He's gray-haired. He has more hair than I do, and that really makes me mad.
Yeah, most people do. Yeah.
You know, the dogs.
They're
okay, anyway, Larry Harker's Auto is at 38th Avenue in Indian School. He's a really good guy. He's a guy that could handle those kinds of things. And the good guys and the old guys were smart enough to say, no, we're not the right guy. So you need to go over to this shop because he's got this guy and he's a lot better than I am. So the referral is part of we oftentimes send people to stereo shops mm-hmm. to have windshields replaced, to do a variety of things that we don't do
right.
and that we don't do well.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what happens. But anyway, Larry Harker's Auto, he's been around since 1967. Bob and Ellen run the place, own the place, and Ellen takes care of the front counter and Bob takes care of the shop. And you can get Bob's attention by asking for it and spend a few minutes, and he's happy to do that with you. But if you're going to take him for a 45-minute drive, he's not going to be happy.
Right.
So, and when we come back, I'm going to tell you a story about somebody that went on a test drive and ended up at Canyon Lake.
That's crazy.
Yeah, that is crazy. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. 33 minutes after the 10 o'clock hour, Mark and Renee Salem here at your service. We've been in business 39 years in the auto repair business. She takes care of the office, and I take care of the staff, and I take care of the shop.
Yeah, no. So the kids do it now.
Yeah, that's true to some extent. Bud, thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. I have a 1988 F-150 four-wheel drive. 351 Windsor fuel injected. And about 3 weeks ago, I fired it up in the driveway cold and I would go to give it gas, put it in gear to pull out and the engine quit running. And, so I changed the fuel canister on the rail up on the frame and everything's fine about 3 weeks. And then here lately, last couple, 4 or 5 days, on a cold start, I would tippy tap the throttle out of the driveway and the engine would quit again, start it, it'd fire right up.
Okay.
Tippy toe the gas pedal and do the same thing. Then after that, it'd run all day just fine.
Okay. All right. Well, how many fuel pumps have you had on this?
It's been about 7 years, 8 years.
Okay. How many miles are on the truck?
Approximately 155,000.
Are you teasing me? You said no. This was a Ford and you got 155. I'm just teasing you.
Especially since it's an 88.
Yeah. Do you keep your tank where? You keep it a quarter, half full? Where do you keep it?
I got dual tanks, so I switch back and forth about half a tanks to try and keep fresh petrol in it.
Okay. All right. Well, what needs to be done is somebody needs to hook up a fuel pressure gauge. That's all that needs to happen. The fact that it
I believe they did that at the shop that I go to, and they diagnosed it to the fuel canister. And when they pulled it off, they couldn't blow through it. And it looked like black sump water out of a creek or something. And they changed that out.
Okay, but you can't draw any conclusions from that because it's still happening. Right?
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, and a plugged fuel filter is typically going to give you a high-speed problem. You can go 60 but not 62. You can do 45 but not 48. So it's going to shut off the supply, and that's going to shut off RPMs and load. So, I mean, there's nothing I can draw a conclusion on because you pulled that swamp water out of your fuel filter area. There's just nothing there. So, and you've said that it hasn't been any different. So intermittently, it's a cold start problem, and you'll feather it out until it runs fine. So I'm saying to you, if you were my customer, I would run a fuel pressure test, and you'd leave it there, you know, for a day or so, and I'd start it and run it every morning. So I don't know what the fuel pressure is on your truck, but let's say it's 50. So if I start it up and I can't get more than 28 or 32 and I tip the throttle in and it dies on its face, I go, oh, okay. So then I drive it or I let it idle there for a while and all of a sudden, boop, the needle pops to 50 and I go drive it and everything's perfect. And I'd like to say your Ford's capable of laying rubber, but I'm not quite sure. And of course, I'm just teasing you. And so that's what needs to happen. We can't just run it in on a Wednesday afternoon when the problem's not there and say, check my fuel pressure. That's silly. We need to check the fuel pressure in the environment where the problem is at. So that's kind of what needs to be done. This is one of those things that you can guess a whole bunch. I mean, if you want to, throttle position sensor, map sensor, 88 Ford, fuel pressure regulator.
How long do those throttle body sensors usually last? I mean, could I be due for one?
No. They all have symptoms associated with their demise, and there's no way anybody can answer that question, because if you hang on to the throttle and you drive from Texas and back, then the throttle is going to be at one place, and so it's not going to do the full sweep like a windshield wiper does on your car. So no, it's not going to be anything on the throttle body, other than I don't know where the fuel pressure regulator. Thank you very much. The fuel pressure regulator. I don't know where that's at on your car, but normally it's somewhere outside the throttle body, but it could be inside the throttle body. But like I said, we can guess all day long. You can take that to a lot of places and ask them about this and that and if they want to change it. But that's not a good idea. The good idea is do what our industry's supposed to do. Test it in an environment where the problem exists, and clearly it's a fuel-related problem because of what you say. So, you know, if you want to replace the throttle body, you want to do the TPS, you want to do the idle air control motor, you want to do the MAP or the MAF, on the fuel pressure regulator and the fuel pump, one of them's going to fix it. So.
Okay.
Wait, what part of town do you have a shop you like and you trust?
Yes, should I say it over the air or no?
I don't care.
It's Exclusive Auto Repair. A feller named Ivan runs it, and a mechanic that's just so precise, and he looks for every little detail. He's really great. His name is Sal.
Okay.
And, they take care of me very well, but I'm over here in North Glendale off of 55th and Olive.
Okay. I'm not going to send you any place other than where you're happy, and clearly you're happy. So I think this is a real easy thing. Drop it off and you say, hey, this is what I got. In the morning when it's cold, it dies as soon as I hit the throttle, or I try to feather the throttle, and sometimes I can get it running. But once I get it warmed up, I can drive it, and everything's fine. It seems to be that cold morning stuff. That's what I would do. And then say, what's your diagnostics? What is your diagnostic fee? And most everybody's $75 to $125. Some of them are lower, some of them are higher. So I'm trying to give you a window that I know is going to be good. But anyway, thank you very much, and good luck to you. Good luck to you. And you know what? I'm going to go over my time, and I'm going to get Bob, because he's been waiting. Bob, I'm going to get you no matter what. So tell me what you got going.
Hi, Mark. I got an 02. It's a 2002 Chevy Blazer, S10 Blazer, with 219,000 miles, and the transmission won't shift into third gear.
Okay.
And the tires are worn out, and the air doesn't work, and it needs ball joints. It's got a little dent in the back, and I got to get rid of it because my wife won't let me have the transmission rebuilt. So I got one of these junk car places. They'll come get it and give me $250.
Okay.
You think that's the best I can hope for?
You just need to call around and be prepared to send them a picture on your phone or something like that. They're going to part it out as well, $250. I mean, this car, it's old. You know that. And so it's 17 years old. So they're not going to have a whole lot of parts on your car. No insurance company is going to pay for a front clip off of a junk S10 Blazer, because the front clip installed and painted is three times the value of the vehicle. Right. So, and let me just argue with your wife for a minute, and don't misunderstand. If she's listening, you need to tell me. Okay? Have you had this?
No, she's at work.
Okay. Have you had this for 219,000 miles?
No, I've had it since 05, but the engine is good. I mean, I keep Mobil 1 in it. I change the oil every 4,000 miles. I mean, I got 219,000 out of the original transmission.
Okay.
So that's not bad, huh?
No, it's not bad. So real quick, what's going to happen if you junk this? You going to go buy a new one?
No, I got another. My mom can't drive anymore, so I'm driving my mom.
Okay,
I got a car I'm using.
Get rid of it. I'd call a couple of other places, and what they want to know is what's the sheet metal look like? Okay, you said there was a little dent in the back. We don't care about the back. What do the front fenders look like? What does a grill look like? What
it's
is a front bumper and rear bumper? Okay, that's what you need to say. Yeah. And it starts and runs.
You
it has first and second.
Low
year.
Then?
Huh?
250 is low. I should get more than 250.
No, I don't know. I don't think you're going to – I think you're going to spend a lot of time and make $50 or $100 is what I think. But you can call lots of other places. Call a couple of different wrecking yards. Call one north, south, east, west.
And I think he said he was going to donate it, and they were going to give him money. A lot of the wrecking yards don't even pay for them anymore. They just –
That's true.
Yeah.
And then on the 250, what you could do is you could donate it to a high school auto shop or something like that, probably write it off for $300, $400, talk to your accountant. And so if you write it off as $200 or $300, I think the accountants say that you don't have to pay tax on $200 or $300. Mm-hmm. So anyway, Bob, good luck to you. Right. And next time you call and it's a discussion between you and your wife, you make sure she's on the phone too, okay? But, you know, I'm not going to talk you into putting a transmission in this thing. There's just too many other things that are going to follow after it. So I'm thinking, you know, it's time to bail. And if you got your mother's car, we're home free. 602-508-0960. We'll be back right after this. Well, welcome back, everybody. 46 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, I'd like to tell you about a diesel shop up in northern Phoenix, right off the I-17. He's at I-17 at Pinnacle Peak Road. His name is Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. They handle all foreign and domestic light diesel trucks. Otherwise, they don't do the big ones. They're really good at what they do. They have their website is open 24/7 where you can buy parts, compare parts, see what's available for your diesel. But as you can well imagine, it's diesel focused. Strictly Diesel and Repair is a Better Business Bureau rated shop. They have an A+. They have great technicians, and Nate runs the operation, and I know him personally, and I can tell you he's a good guy. He's not going to take advantage of you. He's not going to sell you windshield wipers that you replaced day before yesterday. Did you know that story?
Yes, I did.
Okay. I got an email or a message from a friend of mine. He took his car in, and they told him he needed windshield wipers. And he said, really? Yeah. Are you sure? Oh, yes, sir, we're sure. He says, I just replaced those days ago.
Yeah.
Just days ago. Mm-hmm. And so I'm a lightning rod for the bad guys in our industry, and I don't mind. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of good guys, but I am the first to recognize there's some out there that don't walk in between the two lines we're supposed to stay. Mm-hmm. So they kind of deviate outside of that.
Yeah.
Okay, Lucy, you're up first. How can I help you, Lucy?
Oh, thank you so much. I just need a little advice about, I'm trying to change out my car, maybe.
Okay.
I've got a 2008 Nissan Pathfinder, and it's been a great car. It's got, 280,000 miles on it.
Okay.
And mostly highway miles. And I'm starting to get nervous about future, you know,
big ticket
issues
items
coming up. I'm worried about big ticket items. Yes,
okay.
That's exactly right.
Okay.
And if I were to change out, and I don't know, that's why I'm calling to, you know, get some advice. And if I were to change out, what would be a good car to go to, or should, you know, what do you think? With that kind of mileage and a 10-year-old car, how am I, what do you think?
Two questions. Yeah. Number one, have you replaced the air conditioning system in its entirety yet?
No.
Have you replaced the transmission?
No.
Okay. The sales tax and license of a new car will pay for those two things twice over. So those are the big things. If it doesn't use any oil, I want to tell you something. We see cars demise all the time. I've got cars in my fleet, and I talk about customers' cars, from 200,000 to 500,000 miles. The common denominator of when we replace an engine and when we won't is somebody overheated it. Somebody tried to drive. The oil light comes on. They tried to drive 2 miles home. So an overheat, a significant overheat, and running it low on oil is the demise. this motor, when it starts throwing in the towel, it's going to start blue smoking you, and it's going to be drop oil on the on the ground, which means that we're building up internal pressure because the rings are worn out and the oil's coming out of the tailpipe. That's the beginning of the end. So let me flip on you. You could do a lot of work to that for the sales tax and license, which are non-recoverable dollars when you buy a new one. As far as what you should buy, I need you to give me, I need you to give me three. So what I want you to do is I want you to come up with the three options, because there are a lot of options for, you know, Pathfinder replacements. So I need you to narrow it down to three.
Okay, I'm interested in another Pathfinder.
Okay.
And I'm interested in maybe a 2-year-old car rather than a brand new car.
Okay. Well, there's just I have nothing wrong with the Pathfinder, and with your success, then I don't know why that wouldn't be one of your top three. So the Nissan Pathfinder, the Toyota 4Runner. There's, like I say, there's lots of four-door sport utility vehicles out there. So if just my email is real easy. It's markwithak@marksalem.com. Just give me three.
Okay.
Just tell me what you're looking at. Used, you're going to have a used car checkover by your shop. That's going to cost you $100 plus or minus. They're going to tell you what needs to be done now and maybe soon and maybe down the road, which gives you negotiation posture for the guy or the shop you're buying it from. So don't buy anything used unless you have it checked over. It's the best money spent. We had a lady in the front lobby a while ago. She had a car. We wrote $950 worth of work that it needed now. She took it back to the dealer. They did the work for her and sold her the same car at the same price. So she came back and she goes, that's the best $100 I've ever spent. That doesn't happen often, but that's the purpose of a used car checkover. Thank you, Lucy. Oh. Good luck to you. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
You bet. John, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hey, Mark. I called last week. I got that 2006 Chevy Express van with the oil leak.
Okay.
It's got 201,000 miles on it, and here's my question. Would it be worth putting a, you know, I don't know, $1,000 in to fix the oil leak with that kind of miles on it?
Well, yeah, I think we talked about this, like you say, last week. Has the PCV valve been checked? Has that system been verified?
No.
Okay, well, we need to do that first. I don't know what size the oil leak is. You could go to a thicker weight. You could certainly do that. And I don't, you know, if the back, hold the tailgate and the bumper and the back doors of your Express is covered in oil, then nothing's going to fix that. So you can either replace the rear seal or the back of the intake manifold, or you can just drive it and let the oil blow underneath the car, and you'll have a big oil leak and it'll drip everywhere, but you just keep feeding it oil. So I can't answer your question, but I want you to check the PCV valve system first. And if the PCV valve, which is a vacuum for the engine, is not working, then you're developing internal pressure, which is causing your oil leak. So we need to do that first. And I don't know that it's $1,000. You threw that number at me last week, and I don't know if that's the right number or not.
Well, and we tell people you got to look at the inside of the car, the outside of the car, because he said, should I put the money in it? Well, not knowing what the rest of the vehicle looks like, is it worth keeping? I don't know. Or
and
is
how
it
much maintenance is he due, and how much maintenance is he up for, and what has he done? Have you driven this car its entire life, John?
Yeah, I had it.
Okay, so it just really depends. I would want to see all your receipts to see how much money you spent divided by 201,000 miles. If you're sitting there at 50 cents a mile, then I don't really think you spent as much money as you think you have. And if you're at a dollar a mile, that might be different. So those are the things, but, you know, get the PCV valve checked, then decide whether you're going to fix the oil leak or not. And depending on how big it is, if you don't have any spots on the rear tailgate or the rear bumper, then it's not that big of a leak. Okay?
All right, thanks a lot.
All right, you betcha. Terry, you're up next. How can I help you?
Good morning.
Good morning.
I've got a 2008 GMC Sierra pickup.
Okay.
It's got about 160,000 miles on it. It's been fine, but when I put it in reverse now, when it's cold and I back it up, there's something clicking. Click, 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 click. And it ticks when I back up, and sometimes I'm having a little bit of a struggle getting it into gear periodically. And Mark, when I go down the road, now this has been true for the last 20,000, I hate to say, embarrassed to say, 20,000 miles.
Just say it's your wife's car. That's all.
Well, actually, frankly, for the most part, it was.
I'm not getting into that, Terry. I'm just coaching you, okay?
I know. Well, once she got out of a car that she had to get down into a truck where she gets up into it and looks down, she, and, well, you know, it's a control factor. Anyway, when I'm going down the road, it feels like every once in a while something clicks, like the air compressor goes on. There's a little bit of a, you know, I can't hear it, but you can feel it.
Okay.
Like a humming. And then it clicks off, and then it'll click on again. And
okay, does it click every time you start it in the morning?
No.
Okay. Well, we have to hear the
cold,
click.
We have to hit the tick, 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 tick when I back up.
Here's what you have to do. You have to tell us how to make it happen. It's got to sit overnight. It's got to be cold.
Yep.
You got to start it up. You got to count to three, put it in reverse. The noise should be there. I'm going to start it up. I'm going to finish my cup of coffee. I'm going to walk back inside, set the coffee cup down, walk back out. We need to do what you do. And then you might say, I'm going to hold the idle up and I'm going to put it into reverse and it's not there. Or, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to put it in neutral and start it up and move it up to reverse. Is it there? So I'm coming from park down to reverse or neutral, Bob. These are the things you have to modify this. And you have to teach us how to do it. But I want to tell you something. Clicking, sitting still could be anything. It could be a blend door. It could be a compressor coming on and off. Although if you have the climate controls off, then it's off. The compressor can't come on unless it's on heat or air conditioning when you start it up in the morning, and that'd be easy enough. Turn off the heat or air conditioning, and the click goes away. Another thing I want you to do is I want you to see if you can isolate it from the center of the dash. Okay. And maybe you have your wife started up, and you're outside, and you kind of walk around the front real quick.
Good idea.
Okay, is it engine compartment? Is it cab? Is it the passenger seat is resetting? Or maybe your wife's beer bottle's rolling around underneath the seat or something.
I wonder if that's it.
Yeah. So anyway, just learn how to do it. But at this particular point, if you wanted to go to Tucson and mess around and come back, I'd go with you with a clicking noise like that. I mean, obviously it's not going to be anything of substantial nature.
Yeah.
So
okay.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.
You betcha. His wife sounded like your wife and my wife.
Oh.
Okay. Action Auto Repairs at I-17 and Deer Valley. Tom owns Action Auto, and he's been around since 1983, and I've known him since the early 80s. In 2 weeks from now, Tom and I and another guy are going to go snowmobiling. I've never done before. And so Tom tells me that he has snowmobiles that do like 100 miles an hour. And my son's letting me borrow his Michelin suit, which is this big old thing that's supposed to keep me warm.
Yeah.
Now this desert boy has never ridden a snowmobile, but he says he can teach me.
Okay.
So if I'm back hurt and there's a bunch of replay shows, it's because he got me hurt.
That's right.
It's
I'm his fault. Your life insurance policy.
Exactly.
I think. Yeah.
So, but Tom knows cars and he has a BMW technician that's second to nobody. So if you're looking for a non-dealership type independent shop to work on your BMW, anybody can change the oil and rotate your tires, but when you have a problem, you better find somebody that knows that car. So Action Auto Repair, I-17 in Deer Valley, make sure you stop by and visit them if you're up in that area. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open, 602-508-0960. Well, welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. We have four lines open. We've got Charlie, which I'm going to get to in about 30 seconds. And we have four other lines, 602-508-0960. We had seven calls last hour. We can do 10 an hour. So if you want to give us a call, we'll talk to you about symptoms. So give me your make and model. Tell me, let's discuss the symptoms, what's going on and stuff like that. So this portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Auto Dynamics. It's Sun City's largest and most trusted source for complete automotive services. Chuck Nidey opened it in 1982. His son Derek is running it now. Derek's a tad better than Chuck is. Nevertheless, Derek is the kind of guy you'd want your daughter to bring home. And I'm telling you, he's got your interest in front of his own. They don't sell unnecessary parts or repair. So if you're looking for a great shop in Sun City area, I recommend you visit Auto Dynamics on the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. Charlie, good morning.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you. Thank you.
Yes, you are. Thank you. I've got a 95 Ford F-250 Power Stroke, and I had a fellow look at the brakes a few days ago, rear brakes, and he said they were okay, but I needed rear axle sealed. What are the symptoms that I should be looking for to know about that?
Well, first of all, if what he described to you is what you said, you're in really good shape. The rear axle seals are going to be on the back side of the drum, or actually the axle itself. So we're going to have to take the axle out and probably replace the seal. Now, when the axle seal gets really bad, it coats the back side of the – do you have rotors in the back or drums in the back?
They're drums.
Okay. You would have had oil all over there. You'd have had a line of oil on the wheel well, and you would have had to replace the rear shoes. So in your particular case, the fact that he said your shoes are fine, but you're leaking out of the rear axle seals, did he say one side or the other or both?
Just looked at one side. Okay. To determine that the shoes were okay.
Okay. And this is a shop you've dealt with before and you trust him?
It's an individual guy, but I trust him.
Okay, good, good. Well, you know, the idea is there's no labor savings to do the other side. There's no duplication of labor. So you can do one or both sides, but I'd certainly do the side he suggested. Sounds like a pretty straight arrow guy to me.
I did check the level of the gear oil in the differential, and it wasn't down, and I had not added any for probably over a year. So if it had been leaking, wouldn't it have dropped a little bit?
No, not at all. Because, I mean, if it dropped a lot, you'd have had oil everywhere.
Yeah.
So,
but I think he's thinking it's associated with those bearings. It's not.
The bearings.
Yeah, or whatever he said.
The seals.
The seals. Yeah.
No, he'd have to, if he dropped down a half an inch, he'd have oil everywhere. Everywhere.
Okay.
So, no, I don't think that's a good barometer. I don't think that's a good thing to do. What he should have done, though, is maybe take a picture of it and show you. You know,
yeah. That
would have been something good. Now, did he tell you how much brakes are left?
I was standing there looking at when he pulled it off, and it was pretty thick.
Okay.
It was over a quarter of an inch thick.
Well, if you were standing there when he pulled it off, why didn't he show you the axle seal right then?
I thought he had to pull the axles to do the seal.
Okay. All right. Well, it is true that we do have to pull the axle, but he saw something there that led him to believe the seal was leaking. Did he point that out to you?
Well, my truck leaks a lot of oil out of the dipstick hole in the pan, a lot. And I hadn't cleaned it off for quite a while, and it was a lot of oil everywhere. So I took it over to the spray and wash and cleaned it off as best I could.
Okay, well, we just took a hard left turn here because you were standing next to him. And if you were standing next to him when he slid the drum off, then he should have showed you where this oil was at. And if, I mean, if he came back later and said you got a seal, then the question is, I was looking over your shoulder. Why didn't you show me right then? But to answer the question from, you know, I got a bunch of oil underneath the truck. There's a big difference between engine oil leaking and gear oil leaking. I mean, the backing plate on your brake assembly would have been covered in oil. The drum would have been covered in oil. But that's from the dipstick. And then the guy crawls underneath it and he looks and the whole driver's side of the half of the truck is covered in oil. Well, we're done. So I don't know, but if I were you, I'd keep an eye on it. Keep an eye on the differential level anyway. But you don't have to do it right now because I don't think there's enough there to do it. So that's my conclusion based on I'm looking at this situation through your eyes. And so I don't think that this is a death defying thing that you have to deal with. And I also think that if that seal starts leaking back and covers those brake shoes, I'm thinking you're going to know it because you're going to lose 50% of your rear brakes. All righty.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Charlie. You're welcome. That's something else too. How many times do we tell a customer, come back here and look at this? And they say no.
Never that I know of.
And then a lot of them, they'll say, well, I don't know what I'm looking at.
Right.
We can show you. Right. I can show you a broken motor mount. I can show you a strut that's leaking. I can show you a seal that's leaking, especially if the customer's there.
Mm-hmm. And don't we usually see, I mean, it's just caked in mud too, because the mud or the dirt has stuck to all the oil and the grease and all that stuff.
Well, we got a seal and inside the seal, it's spinning.
Right.
And if Charlie's driving, if his wife's taking his truck out on the freeway and running 80 or 90, she's slinging some oil.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to blame it on her.
Okay.
So the idea is yeah, there should be a lot more symptoms than what we have.
Mm-hmm.
But now I have to draw the line between his dipstick oil leak and now an axle oil leak. And I need to know which side. And the dipstick, I think, is going to be on the driver's side. Mm-hmm. So that oil is going to come down the driver's side half of that vehicle. Mm-hmm. So, and he finds the differential full. On top of all of that, I'm going to pass.
Okay. And so it doesn't have any symptoms. Is that because he was asking you what the symptoms are for that?
The ground, oil on the back of the assembly.
Okay.
And not necessarily any drop in oil.
Okay.
In the diff. Because it's like this. Pretend that the differential is a bathtub.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We're talking about to lower the level on the bathtub, you'd have to take a gallon or two out of the bathtub.
Right.
Okay. And the bathtub's going to be 50 gallons if it's filled up.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to take a couple of gallons to drop that level down.
Okay.
So I'm using that as an exaggerated thing.
I was going to say, I didn't know we had 50 gallons.
Well, no. You know what? I came up with that this way. It's a 50. I know what a 55 gallon drum looks like.
Yes.
So it's going to be shorter than a bathtub.
Right.
So I'm thinking if we dump 50 gallons and 55 gallons into the bathtub, we'd have it pretty full.
Okay.
You know what?
We have another caller. That's what.
I don't know that we do. I didn't hear the gun.
Oh, I don't know. Gil? Am I hearing things again?
Gil?
Oh, the lines are open.
Oh, okay. The lines are open. 602-508-0960. Okay, we had a couple callers. I'm
yes.
going to cover those guys up.
Okay.
And I'm going to mark off Auto Dynamics. Okay, the first caller said that he's going to go to some auctions here in town that are really big right now. And if he finds a five-year-old car with 50 miles on it and the plastic is still on the seat, what should he do? Well, the auction's not going to stop and let you take it to your shop for a used car checkover. So hopefully what you would do before it hits the auction driveway is you walk around and find that car.
Okay.
And you say to the owner, tell me the history of the car. Now, if I was the owner of selling a car that's 5 years old with 50 miles on it, I would have a Carfax already there.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a Carfax I pulled up 2 days ago. It shows that when the thing was sold and it doesn't have a single thing after. I'm looking for wrecks. I'm looking for a car that was wrecked in 50 miles. I'm looking for new paint. I'm looking for body panels that don't match.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know what this is. But all I would want is a Carfax. And he can probably do that from his phone.
Okay.
So, or he can go over and rent a term, or, you know, he can take his iPad and figure it out. But that's all I would want. And I would want to talk to the owner to find out what's the story behind this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my dad bought this. He put it in his garage. My mom shot him the next day, and he sat in the garage for 5 years, and I'm going to put it on the auction block. Something. Whatever.
Yeah.
Okay, we had another caller. And last week he called me, and he said he was having a tough time seeing the oil level on the dipstick.
Okay.
Now, the dipstick has two sides, yes?
Yes.
Not always, though. But anyway, dipstick can be round. So sometimes the dipstick's flat on both sides. So
right.
He has an add and a full. He said that he painted the dipstick with flat black paint, and now he can see the level much better. Now, I'm hoping that the add and the full mark is on both sides of the dipstick.
Okay.
He could paint one side, and then he could pivot the dipstick and see, oh, here's the line, and it's right there at the full, or it's between.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking that's what he said.
Okay.
Because it'd be foolish to paint the whole dipstick, because then he wouldn't know where the add and the full mark was.
Yeah, usually they have little divots in them, though, doesn't it?
So, yeah.
Or, I mean, isn't it kind of like stamped in there?
Yes, but you could fill that with paint.
That's if you're a bad painter like you.
No. If you were to go, you could I would say it's more likely than not that we cover up that slash.
Okay.
Now let me ask you something, Mrs. Smarty Pants. what is it when the oil's between the ad and the full mark? How low is it?
A quart at the most.
A quart?
Well,
is it a quart?
Wait, no, stop. Okay. You don't add oil till it's at the ad mark, and that's about a quart low.
That is a quart low.
Okay.
Okay. So if it's at the middle, then it's a half quart low.
Half a quart low, maybe.
Just testing you. You've been around the car guy a while, and your memory's a little better than mine. But yes, you don't add any oil till it gets to the ad mark or below the ad mark.
Right.
People add a quart of oil when it's halfway through and they just overfilled their car.
Yeah. And that was like that gentleman that had the Blazer. It was a 2002 Blazer, and he said he had Mobil 1 in it, which is a synthetic oil, I believe, and he was changing it every 4,000 miles. And I was thinking, wow, that's way too often to change the oil.
Yeah. That was right. I think I even wrote down that he used Mobil just to talk about that later, but you're exactly right. You're putting assuming it's a Mobil 1 and it's a synthetic.
Yeah.
You're putting a premium oil in your car and you're only using it for a third of its life.
Right.
Or even less than that, 25% mm-hmm. of its life. So folks, real quick, there are three kinds of engine oils out there. There is a conventional oil, which your mother and father grew up on. A conventional oil that starts way back in the 40s and 50s. And it was then finally categorized in probably the 60s or the 70s. So that's a conventional oil. It's just the normal oil that we've had for...
It's a little thicker.
No, it's the viscosity changes.
Okay.
So a 10 flows like a 10 weight when it's cold and like a 30 weight when it's hot. So it's not a viscosity issue at all. It's viscosity is the ability to flow.
Okay.
Okay.
So it doesn't flow as much.
It flows, a 1030 flows like a 10 weight when it's cold and it flows like a 30 weight when it's hot. So the mental picture is at cold, at 10 weight, mm-hmm. it should be like sewing machine oil, so to speak.
Right.
But it doesn't do that. But, and a 30 weight on the other side is halfway to peanut butter.
Right.
Okay, so that's what. Can I go on with the story?
No, because you always say when something's leaking, you put a conventional oil in it so it doesn't leak so much.
I tell them to use a single weight, a 30 weight or a 40 weight, where it flows like a 30 weight all the time. We're gonna make the oil a little bit thicker to slow down the oil leak.
Gotcha.
Now I don't even know where I was at.
You just finished with conventional oil.
All right, conventional. Then semi-synthetic or blended oils, 50-50 or 70-30 or 80-20. They won't tell you how much synthetic is in it, how much conventional is in it. They won't tell you. But a semi-synthetic or a blended oil is in the middle. And the synthetics is the top dog, the big dog, and Mobil 1's been around since we were in the gas station business in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea is you've got three different ones. The difference between the two of them is there's two. Price, big price.
Mm-hmm.
And then this oil change interval, conventional is 3,000 to 5,000 miles. Semi-synthetic, a blend, is 5,000 to 7,500. And then a synthetic is 7,500 or 8,000 all the way to 12. And I don't know if I buy Mobil 1's, 20,000 miles. I think I'm not comfortable with that. But the synthetics go from 7,500 north. And I think I'm at 10 or 12,000 miles on my truck.
Yes.
So we usually move people up to the 10 to 12,000 mile mark, but that's usually one oil change a year. That's
right.
Perfectly acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the difference. Price and the oil change interval, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We'll be back. Twenty-one minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. You're welcome to join us. We have three lines open. We've got two taken, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. I have a list of the best car repair shops in Phoenix. It's available on my website, marksalem.com. All of them are different for different reasons, but they're all honest and dependable guys, and they've been in business a long time. Thompson's Auto Repair in Mesa is a little different for this reason. They've been around since 1970. And both Brian and Thelma, their mothers and fathers, went back in car repair even deeper than that. But they're the only shop in Mesa that has applied and made the made the mark. Is that right?
Sure.
There is a level of criteria that we insist on, and some people don't have insurance, some people haven't been in business 5 years, some people have terrible reviews, blah, blah, blah. But when it comes to Thompson's, he's special because he's the only one in Mesa I could find. They're ASC certified technicians. They're really good. Brian and Thelma, you only have to meet one or the other to understand why Mark Salem likes Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. That's in Mesa. He's on Main Street just east of Stapley. Main Street just east of Stapley. And Glenn, how can I help you?
Archie and Edith, good morning.
Yes.
Archie and Edith, that's good. How about Snow White and Jack the Ripper?
That's fine.
Yeah, okay. All righty. I'll take it either way.
Look, I wanted to suggest to you don't back out of that snowmobile opportunity.
Oh, you know, I'm excited to do that.
You do what?
I'm excited. I want to go.
You're going to love it. It's like riding a jet ski, a quad, a motorcycle, all wrapped into one, except it's cold out.
Okay, I can live with that, but here's my question. How do you stop?
Just let off the gas. I think the modern ones have brakes. It's been a while since I've done it.
Okay. And the reason I ask you is on a jet ski, you let go of the throttle, that baby's still flying through the air. And you can't put it in reverse because if you tap the throttle, it throws you over the handlebars. So I think jet skis take a little bit more whatever. But he's talking about going through, you know, the mountains and the forest and going to trails. And we're going to go from what do they call that? Cantina to cantina.
Oh, boy.
And that's going to be a problem for them other guys because Mark doesn't drink. I'm a one beer guy. That's it. So
that's what we did in Wisconsin, go bar to bar. But the food is always it just tastes better after you come in out of the cold.
Okay.
And
okay.
Your iced tea will taste better too.
Now let me ask you a question. Where are you from again?
Yeah.
Wisconsin, Milwaukee area.
Wisconsin. You can always hear them. Can you tell the difference between somebody from Minnesota and Wisconsin by their dialect, Glenn?
I really can't.
Okay. I can't either. We've got friends in both places, and actually I have friends in both places, but I can't tell they both have a Minnesota and Wisconsin. So that's okay. I'm not making fun of you because us Arizona people, we talk like cowboys.
I've been here over 30 years, and apparently I haven't lost it.
That's okay. That's okay. Yeah, that kind of – you know, for me, for a new customer walk in and it's got the Minnesota you know, it's just a different kind of customer.
Yeah.
Usually they come from a small town. Usually they've been around a long time. Usually they're just a different kind, not better, but a different kind of customer. So that's – anyway, Glenn, did you have a car question or did you just want to tease me about the
– Yeah, no, I wanted to just tell you something, my experience with full synthetic oil. I used it for the first time in my truck, and I'm approaching 10,000 miles, and what's amazing to me is how it's still just a nice, happy caramel color.
Bingo.
Compared to the old stuff that would be black at 4,000.
Bingo. The blackness is where the oil goes through and picks up pieces of dirt and carbon and takes it through the filter. Synthetic has a little bit more detergent, and it's also going to let some of that dirt settle at night all the way to the bottom of the pan, so it's going to stay a tad fresher than the rest of them. But I've always said the color of oil doesn't really mean anything. Unless it's white, and then that means you have a coolant leak.
Yeah.
So, anyway, well, good for you, Glenn. Thank you very much for calling, and thank you for telling me that at least my snow ride should have brakes.
Yeah.
That's important to me. All righty, Ed, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark.
Hi.
I have a 2003 Saab, and it feels like the brakes are sticking.
Okay.
And I've looked, and I don't see any obvious vacuum leaks, but when you go down the road, the pedal is a little high and hard, and then when you hit the brakes, they don't let off right away. You can feel them kind of sticking a little bit when you let off the pedal.
We have two different issues. You got to fix the hard pedal first. Because you don't, because it's entirely possible the hard pedal will fix and they're not releasing as quickly as they used to. So the hard pedal, it's not a vacuum issue. It could be a vacuum issue. And what you want to do is you know, there's a big hose from the engine to the big booster. Yes.
Yes.
Okay. So what you're going to want to do is park the car and go out there an hour later and just pop that hose off. and you should hear a vacuum release. Okay?
Right.
Can you do that?
No.
Okay. And so if you get a vacuum leak, then at least it's holding vacuum. Could still be bad, but it's holding vacuum. Is there ever a time where the pedal goes back to power brakes and doesn't seem to be hard?
Well, it's not like the power brakes don't work. Like it's like if I had no vacuum at all, it's more like the pedal is just raised up a little bit.
Okay.
The brakes work fine.
You're pointing me, all your symptoms are pointing me to a master cylinder, but I've never seen what you're talking about with a master cylinder. Okay. I mean, you're kind of talking and I don't know if you want me to purposely focus on a master cylinder, but I'm not going to jump there. I don't, what you're describing is far more, a booster, at least the hard pedal and higher. Those two are a far more of a booster, but you know, you can go take it someplace and, for a couple $100s, we can put, take the pads out and put some load sensors in there and you apply the brake and whatever you got in the front should be twice the rear and blah, blah, blah. And by the time I'm done, I got 2 or 3 hours in your car and I'm telling you, you got good split between the fronts and the back. And I tell you, you got good pressure and good volume and we're no closer than where we are. So if I were the technician working on the car, I'd be checking that booster. I'd be making sure that it had a diaphragm and it was holding vacuum. I'd also get underneath the car when it's running and shut all the doors and cram my fat body underneath that driver's side. And I'd be applying that brake and listening, seeing if I heard a or any kind of a noise from the booster. So how many miles are on it?
170,000.
Okay. Well, that's what I would do. Do you have a Saab shop?
No.
Okay.
I've done a lot of the maintenance myself.
Alrighty. Alright, well there is a Saab shop, David Enrique, he sold though. Mm-hmm. What was IMM Auto. Now the reason he's not on my list anymore is David sold to his number one guy, but the number one guy, any new owner has to have 5 years of experience. So he's not there.
Right. To be on our list.
To be on our list. But that doesn't mean that he's a bad shop. So IMM Auto is my go-to Saab guy. And so you might keep that in mind because they know Saabs and their parts department is filled with Saab and Alfa Romeo and all those weird cars that I prefer not to work on. Welcome back, everybody. 33 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Sitting next to me is my wife, Renee Salem. Her whole job is to make me, my life miserable, and Gil's life miserable. Gil is the one that runs the show. He's the engineer. He's the train engineer. Renee is actually in the caboose. I'm just next to him. And this is what Renee did during the break. With her microphone, blew his ears out. Now he can't hear. He's probably going to go on disability because you don't know enough not to throw your headphones. And then you picked him up and started rubbing your mic.
I did that on purpose.
Yeah, I know. So. Poor Gil. And he's probably going to have a workman's compensation claim just because of you.
Yeah.
Speaking of good shops, Kurt's Auto Repair is up on I-17 in Bell. He's in the northeast corner. I've known Kurt for a long time. And there was a lot of times I've called my shops and said, I need some help. Somebody's close to you. And like all the rest of them, Kurtz does a great job in just slaying that monster. So if I can get the symptoms and the information out of you, I can pass that on to Kurt and say, they're going to call. And then from a professional point of view, I'm usually going to pick out what you're saying that's important to us. And the fact that your mother used to own the car and she lived in Iowa and all that kind of stuff, that doesn't mean anything. Nevertheless, Kurtz is a great guy. And Eric and Jeff and Kurt are three master technicians and they're really good at what they do. And not necessarily Jeff and Eric mind Kurt, but they're related to him, son-in-law and son and stuff like that. But they're ornery and I like that. So, Kurt's Auto Repair. Let's go to the phones, and who have we got first? We got Terry. Terry, good morning.
Good morning, Mark. I talked to you a little while ago about my 2008 GMC Sierra pickup.
Yeah.
About the transmission. And I came out, and now I can't get it in gear it at all.
Okay. Did you check the fluid?
You know, I did not.
Okay, that's where we have to start.
Wow.
Okay. And if I fixed it, you better make a big donation to the plate next time it passes you. A big one.
Would that keep it from going into gear?
We can't talk about that, Terry, because you need to check it first, and you need to fill it up to the full mark. You need to pull the stick. You need to look at the stick. It's going to tell you exactly what it wants. It's going to tell you idling in park or in drive, and it's going to tell you exactly what it wants. Engine off, engine on, idling in park, whatever. You need to stick it a couple of times and look at it. Now, you're going to have to add it till it gets up between the hash marks. Then if you go out and drive it, then all the problems are solved, and you have third gear again, and it moves when you ask it to move, then we're done. You just got to go figure out where that fluid went.
But he said it won't move at all.
He went from no third gear to it won't move at all. Fluid. That car is yelling, fluid!
Oh, boy.
That's what it's yelling.
I'll take a peek.
Okay. That's going to fix it anyway. All right.
Okay.
Thank you, Terry. Tom, good morning to you. How's your ears?
Mine are killing me.
Good morning. I hear you just fine.
Yeah.
Me too.
Man, that's bad.
Are you fading away? No, I'm fine.
Renee is, but I'm not.
Yeah. Well, she needs to back away from her microphone. How's
that? I'm going to turn her down. I'm going to turn her down just a little bit. You know, I'm going to turn her off. That's even better.
Yes.
Okay, I'm ready.
I have an original owner, 2004 Ford Expedition, 90,000 miles, and we're having problems with this height adjustment for the brake pedal and accelerator.
Okay.
So my wife is about 4'10", 4'11", I'm 6 feet, so we used it a lot.
Okay.
We broke once before, so many years ago, and it was replaced by what was then a five-star Ford. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, it's Chapman.
Okay.
And so I'm going back again with this situation, and they're telling me the part's no longer available.
Okay.
And I did a little looking into it, and I discovered that the failure mechanism is there's a drive gear. It's part of the assembly. There's a worm gear that's steel, and then it has a nylon gear pressed onto it. And the nylon gear breaks, gets a crack in it.
Okay.
And then it'll turn one revolution till it hits that crack, and then it stops.
Okay.
So I'm looking for some way to resolve this. Other than, I don't know what to say. But.
Well, you're rolling the dice here because there's a whole lot of us gray-haired guys that could accomplish your goal. But you're going to drop the steering column down. You're going to disable this entire mechanism. Then you're going to go and put it on your bench and take it apart. And what happens when you're wrong?
Good point.
Yeah, and what my fear is that if you're wrong, you're really going to be you just paid twice for the repair. So I think it would be a good idea to just take it in and say to them, I've lost the ability to adjust my pedals, and I would like you to diagnose it and call me with an estimate. Now, there's a lot of expeditions out there. The question would be is we're going to go and we're going to look at the part number, and then we're going to look in other books to determine that, guess what? That 04 shares this same module, this same gearbox for six years. So now all of a sudden we've got this six-year spread. Now we call a couple of wrecking yards, and maybe you, if you want to take it apart, you get the old one and the new one, the one that works, and put it down. Now, there's going to be just two wires. We're just going to reverse the polarity. We're going to go positive, top, negative, and that makes the pedals go in, and then we're going to reverse the polarity and make them come out. So it's not going to be really difficult. It's something that we can put on the workbench and we can exercise that guy. What part of town do you live in?
Oh, I see. I've been Carefree.
Okay. I don't have anything in Carefree, although I would love to have something in Carefree. I've got 40th Street and Greenway, Tom Blackwell. I've got Kurtz in Action, both over on the I-17 in Bell and Deer Valley. And that's kind of the area that, you know, I can offer you. I-17 is way west, and then of course 40th Street in Glendale is
Greenway
is a tad off of your Scottsdale Road Carefree area, but that's as close
as I can
get. Yeah,
I think 40th and Greenway sounds more appealing to me.
I'll do his commercial right now. Tom Blackwell owns 40th and Greenway. He's as ornery as a wild cat with a bad foot.
Well, it's like my mom, no problem.
Oh, but Polly is his wife and Christy is his right hand, and those two know exactly where he doesn't like the stun gun they carry. But he's okay. Also one of the old guys that's not going to be afraid of this. So you're going to have to say, go for it. And he's going to say, okay, take it out and put it in as this much money. And then we'll go from there. So if I have to take it apart and I find your gear is broken and I can glue it or pin it back together, then that's extra. So tell him, Mark Salem says you don't have a prayer in hell of fixing this, but you are the closest shop to me. And that's waving
that's
the
right.
red flag in front of the bull. And then we'll see how he does. Okay.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. My friend who drives Ford pickups and so on, he just looked at me and said, that's a first world problem. You need to just relax.
Well, no, I was going to tell you who cares, but then you answered my question. Your wife is 4 foot. You're six. And now the seat only moves so far. So you
exactly,
can't expect
yeah.
your wife to go up there and put her chest against the steering wheel so she can reach the pedals, because when that airbag goes off, it's going to send her to Wilcox.
Yeah.
So
yeah. That's the reason we have the 2004 now. The 99 got smashed by a Toyota Tundra. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, don't brag about that, because the Expedition is like three times the weight of the Tundra. So don't
do
that.
The Tundra was on top of the Ford. It was all over.
Okay. And besides, Expeditions outweigh just about 90% of the cars out there. But nevertheless, I'll leave that alone. Thank you very much. We're going to take a break 42 minutes after the hour, 602-508-0960. And all five lines are open. And so I can count that you'll call in, because the end of the show is 20 minutes away. Okay, welcome back, everybody. And, I messed up. We'll push a couple buttons and make everything work again. Now, you were yelling at me about fluid, and Gil just said that was great. So he's been in radio a lot longer than you
have.
That
was an obnoxious noise.
Yeah. And listen, folks, if you want to vote on this, I'm going to tell you how I got Jack the Ripper name and how she got Snow White the name. So if you want to vote, just call in, tell Gil, no, I don't want to hear it. Yes, I want to hear it. And that's the easy way out. Al, good morning to you. How can I help you?
I just called in with his adjustable Ford pedals. I've been down that road.
Okay.
My wife has a 2001 Ford F-150, and she's, like his wife, a little short squirt.
Okay.
So she needs those pedals up about as high as they can go. So I had to replace that assembly, and it comes in pieces. You don't have to get the whole assembly.
Okay.
And it's one of Ford's better ideas. It comes with a bunch of plastic gears. So here's what happens. People adjust the pedals with their foot on the pedal.
Okay.
And what have you, it overloads or stresses the mechanism.
And the plastic gears can't handle that extra load.
That's correct.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I got a replacement out of a Lincoln Navigator.
Bingo. See? I've been vindicated by Al, and
yeah,
he's talking about a Lincoln Navigator. That's the sister to the Expedition.
Yeah. Right.
So now, did you do that yourself? Take it apart, replace
it? Well, that's a yes and no. I went to junkyard after junkyard, three or four of them.
Okay.
Found a couple of them. You have to be careful, because a lot of them are broken but never get used.
Right.
The one I found out of a Navigator, I believe, was from somebody who drove the vehicle and never used the adjustment.
Okay.
A single driver. But I went to three or four junkyards. The junkyard pulled it out for me.
Okay.
I gave the kid $10 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then I took it to my repair shop, and they installed it.
Okay.
Thunderbird Auto, by the way.
Okay. Now, you know that Thunderbird sold, so Tom is retired. The guy that has taken his place doesn't have the 5 years experience, but I understand he's a swell guy, and Tom likes the heck out of him. So while I can't offer you the benefits of him being on our best shops, I can tell you that Tom thinks the world of him. So,
well, I'm thinking there's a misunderstanding there, because I had work done by them 2 weeks ago, and they said they hadn't sold the shop.
I think the end of this month.
Wait a minute. Let me ask you, is it the Thunderbird on the west side, west of Grand, or close to Grand?
Well, the one on west of Grand, close to Grand, has been gone for a long time, as I understand it. It's at Reams Road and
right.
And
I thought he sold that one too, but I've been wrong before.
I think it's just done at the end of this month.
Oh, is it?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. I don't know. I'm going to default to what the shop is telling you. I'm just telling you, if you were my buddy and I didn't hate you, I would tell you, keep going to Thunderbird until they do something you don't
want. Well, I'll talk to them. I have occasion to go in next week.
Okay. All righty, Al. I appreciate it.
Back to the pedal. Just quick, there is an alternative to purchasing that.
Okay.
Ford has an antique, they call it antique vehicle facility or distribution center back in the Midwest in Michigan where they keep a lot of this stuff.
Okay.
It's very expensive.
Okay.
He's talking $300-$500 potentially.
All right. Well, if I had one of those gear sets or a whole bunch of those gear sets, then they'd be pretty expensive if they're an obsolete number. But I agree with what you said. I'm just going to change it slightly.
Okay.
We get the factory part number and then Google that.
Okay.
And we're also going to look at application. And the number should follow the application. So at that particular point, I can't tell you. My guys found a Stromberg carburetor kit for a 43 fire truck the other day.
Okay.
They also found a carb spacer that we all bet they wouldn't find. So, you know, if you're good, pretty good on the internet, then you're as good as my guys are.
Yeah, that stuff's out there, but you got to go looking for it. But in this particular case, you got to be sure the one that you get, if it's out of a wreck, hasn't been broken itself.
Well, and that's easy enough. If you take a battery along with you and a test light and a couple of jumper leads, you can run the motor yourself.
Well, I found it easier. The part that breaks, you do it with an electric drill.
Okay, no, that's fine. That, I mean, you're driving the flexible drive shaft, right?
Right.
Okay, and I knew that too. And that's something else that could be bad. It could be that's wadded up as well. So anyway, I got to run, Al. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. And, you know, it's good to have, he's an old grizzly guy.
Yeah.
And he understands that. And I wasn't going to say anything about, you don't know what a speedometer cable looks like. It's round, but it's got square ends on it.
Yeah.
It's like somebody hammered the ends.
I don't. Yeah, I've seen one before.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm going to tell him why you're Snow White and I'm Jack the Ripper here in just a minute. Yeah. What's that?
We've had four people who want to hear the story.
Oh, Jiminy.
Okay. I'm going to do it kind of at the end of the show because she's going to get really mad at me.
I'm going to be leaving in a minute here so I don't have to hear this story again.
There is a good reason why we're – and this is named – I mean, these names have followed us. We've been married a very long time.
Yes.
I mean, I've been married to you for a very long time. I don't know if you want to count that or not. But the idea is we got married right out of high school.
Pretty much.
Pretty much. What do you mean pretty much?
A year after high school.
No, that a year after I got out of high school, you were a year behind me.
I graduated in 73 and we got married in 74. So it was a year.
Oh, it wasn't either. We got married in February.
There we go, folks. We're not going to argue on the air.
Okay, we aren't?
No.
Nope. That's because you're always right, right?
I am right.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, it's not that kind of a mechanism isn't that bad. I would have told him so what, or we could move it to a position that made him happy, but he's 6 foot, she's 4 foot, and we ain't going to do that.
No.
So, but finding the obsolete parts isn't that bad. And you might find somebody that says, I went to a bunch of wrecking yards and found a bunch of these gears, and I have them. The problem is, if he wants $100 for the gear, forget it. I'll take it apart first. Mm-hmm. But if he wants $10 or $15 or $20, send it.
Right.
Because I'll take the risk. The risk associated with that.
It's not that much money.
Exactly. So, but anyway. Al did exactly what we talked about. I need to talk about Blackwell Automotive. I've known Tom Blackwell since Jesus was a baby. I've known him for a long time. He is an extraordinarily good fabricator. There's times he makes things that he shouldn't be making, but he does a good job. He also works on hot rods. People bring him their hot rods and 400 pieces, and he puts them together. And that's not an easy job. But as far as all the other cars, he's that kind of guy that you can wave the red flag in front of, and he'll spend the rest of his life fixing your car and bill you for 2 hours. But he's that kind of a bulldog. He just grabs a hold of things and makes it. So he's an independent-owned facility. He has ASE-certified technicians. He does everything from oil changes to engine swaps, both domestic and foreign. Polly and Christy are the two ladies that run roughshod on Tom. And when Tom and I get together, inevitably, one or both of us has a wife that won't talk to us for a long time. And we went to dinner the other night.
Yes.
And you're rolling your eyes and so is Polly. Mm-hmm. And we're having a great time.
Because you two are just alike.
We are. We are. We are different brothers. Different brothers. No. Brothers of different mothers.
Yes.
Yeah, we're brothers of different mothers. Okay. I'm just trying to kill time so I can tell the story and have you not use bad words and whatever. But I also want to tell you that my website, our website, marksalem.com, has lots of information in the FAQs. You see, I've been doing radio since 1988, and we've kept track of a lot of the common areas that we touch in. No start, no run, dies in flight, blah, blah, blah. And so those kinds of calls have created our FAQs. Mm-hmm. And so our FAQs, you know, they talk about probably 30 or 40% of what we talk about on the radio.
Oh, sure.
And that's already answered in the FAQs. Mm-hmm. And you can look at my picture. You can look at my wife's picture. You can look at the kids' pictures. You can look at the shop because we have all that fancy stuff in on our website that mm-hmm. everybody else has. If you want to follow me on Facebook, I am allowed to be on Facebook. Sometimes I'm a little ornery on Facebook, but I stick to car stuff. Why are you rolling your eyes on that? I stick to car stuff. So Mark Salem on whatever, Facebook. That's all I do. I don't do Instagram or anything like that. But I'll tell you something else. Andy, our daughter, mm-hmm. she does it in Instagram, doesn't she? And right. I think she's under Salem Boys.
Salem okay. Boys Auto, yeah.
If you go to Salem Boys Auto, here's what we've got our guys doing. This is kind of cool, and I'm really proud of them. Mm-hmm. They take a bad motor mount out of your car. They are obligated to take the shop's phone and take a picture of the old one and the new one next to one another. So we have that ability because we got the old one in on our bench and the new one on our bench. Mm-hmm. So we have asked our staff, I don't know how many are out there, 150, I don't know. But we've asked our staff to go get the shop phone and take those pictures, and we've asked them to take them from different venues, different angles, 12 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 9 o'clock, so that Andy can figure out. But if you go to Instagram and Salem Boys Auto, we've got just about everything there. What are you laughing at? Who said something?
I was just looking at something Andy sent me on Instagram, but it's okay. Go ahead.
What did she send you?
Nothing.
You can't?
No, okay. I can't say it on there.
All right. Here's it is Snow White and Jack the Ripper. This is my side of this story, and it's not hers. In our family, we have specific duties, and my duty is to say no, and her duty is to say yes.
Or ask your father.
So I'm going to give you a stupid example that I've used for 40 years, and she's just taken off her headset, and she's walking out of the studio. You're probably best not hear this. Okay. So when the girls, and we have two girls and a boy, and when the girls were younger, and I'm being joking here, okay? Don't get mad at me. The girls would say, hey, Mom, we want to go to the football game, and then after the football game, we want to go to a big boondocker, and then we want to smoke weed and get really, really drunk, and then we want to drive home. And Renee would say, go ask your father. Because Renee doesn't know how to say no except to me. I've turned your mic off. You can't come back in the studio. So, and I've always been the no guy. So we have developed these two personalities where the kids know if you want a yes, you go to Mom. But you don't want to come and ask me a question that there's even a possibility I'm going to say no.
1 minute.
So the whole idea is that somebody coined the Jack the Ripper Snow White, and really and truly anybody that knows my wife Renee knows that she is the epitome of Snow White. She hasn't said a bad word in her life. She doesn't say anything bad about anybody else. She's a very kind, nice person, except to me. But me, I call it the way it is, and there is very little filter between my ears and my mouth, and I'm sorry. But I'm sure there's husbands out there that are laughing, and I'm sure there's wives out there that are like me, that have no filter between their ears and their mouth. That's just the way God put us together, and I'm living with that sinful personality, and for a long time. But it's worked really well. The kids are grown now, but when at the bottom of the hour or at the end of the day, they're still really great kids, and that's because their dad said no. So nevertheless, if you want to email me a question, mark@marksalem.com, mark@marksalem.com.